Please welcome Brian Weed.
It's 1 Samuel chapter 17 is where we're going to be after the video. That's one of my favorite texts in the Bible. It's what I preach from perhaps more than any other text in the Bible. But before that, we're going to have the video. It's 6 minutes in length. What it does is highlight everything that's been going on throughout the ministry in Nicaragua. The churches, the feeding centers, the sports centers, even the hospital. We do a lot of different things to reach people. Your church has the ministry covered for us that does the number one outreach. That's sports ministries. We have all kinds of ministries, but we have not seen anything that compares to sports centers and sports ministry that reaches more children and teenagers for the gospel. And because of that, our ministry continues to grow. We have more people being saved, more people answering their call into full-time Christian service. Now, let me ask you a question. When you invest your money in something, and I'm assuming quite a few have invested in something, whether it's 401k, your 401 whatever, your stock options, real estate, whatever. Somewhere, sometime in your life, you've invested in something. When you invest in something, what are you looking for? A return. Now, when you invest in financial things and you build up your portfolio, you are looking for the thing that gives you the most return. I promise you, those that are here in this church that have been giving to the missionary endeavor, you've been giving to Faith Promise, you've been giving to missions over the years, there is nothing that you're investing in that has more of a return on its investment than missions. Because in that, you're investing in the kingdom of God. So if we could have the video at this time, please.
Ay, Nicaragua, Nicaragüita, recibe como prenda de amor este ramo de siempre vivas y healing joyas que hoy florecen para vos. Cuando yo beso tu frente pura, beso las perlas de tu sudor, más dulcita que la frutita del tiguilote y el jocote trona.
Don't tell me what we cannot accomplish. Don't tell yourself we can't change the world. Together, we can change people's eternity.
How are we changing people's eternity? The first method is reaching beyond the church walls. Our seminary, a training center preparing warriors of the cross to change others' eternity. 7 children's feeding centers, operated by volunteers of our local churches, feeding the body and the soul, thus changing children's eternity. 3 sports centers in strategic regions, inspiring hope, instilling discipline, raising self-confidence, and bringing young people to Christ, thus changing their eternity. 1 medical center, healing physical brokenness and allowing Christ to heal spiritual brokenness, thus changing their eternity. The second method is building up the church. 7 churches have been planted and are running under national leadership.
our lives for people the Lord.
All of this is for one purpose: to change others' eternity. Until everyone has been given the gospel, we will do what it takes to reach the world. Will you?
Well, to explain the crutches, because I know it's in the back of your mind. The full story was I was cycling in Kentucky, and a car hit me. And they say it was doing about 50 miles an hour. That was kind of what they projected it as. And so all I ended up with was basically a broken leg. That's a pretty good deal out of an impact like that. But a friend of mine is a youth pastor there in Kentucky, and he said the reason that they hit you was because we're rated as the fourth most unhealthy state in the United States, and you were throwing off our stats. So just to explain the whole thing there, you should already be there in 1 Samuel chapter 17. You've just witnessed the return on your investments in Nicaragua, and it's paying off. Churches are being planted. People are being saved. People are answering their call into full-time Christian service. They're becoming fully dedicated believers in Christ. They're entering into a specific sphere of ministry that God has for them. And it's all because churches like Capital City Baptist Church was willing to pray for us, to financially give, and to be a part of it. And let me explain a little something that I think is worthy of talking about. When you guys come to the mission field, there's a lot of different reasons why you go, but perhaps one of the reasons you have not thought of is in a country like Nicaragua, being socialist or communistic, typically what you have is a society of people who are accustomed to looking for ways to receive handouts. All of those humanitarian projects you see there, like the feeding centers and the sports centers and all of that, that is 100% ran off of volunteer workers. When you saw the pictures of construction going on, that was some monies sent from the missions program of our Managua church, along with the missions program of our Pueblo Nuevo church, combining for local missions, giving to the Los Atillos church, and then the workers building that building that they're finishing up right now, walling it in, putting all the steel work in, putting the flooring in, putting the steel bars in. All of that is done as well by volunteer workers from our churches. Why the shift? Well, first of all, they became Christians. They got saved. The Holy Spirit changes your heart. But when you guys come for all the way from Iowa to Nicaragua to take your vacations, to spend your money that you could have spent in Disneyland or wherever, and you go to Nicaragua, you spend a week and you sweat alongside the Nicaraguan people, that just cast out a vision to them in a way that I can't even articulate. I can talk about missions. I can talk about being involved. I can talk about service. I can talk about volunteering your time. But when you see it firsthand, it impacts you. So I'm in a socialist, communistic nation with a bunch of people serving each other. And I want to honor you for being that example so that we can follow it. And we appreciate that. We look forward to international trips to Costa Rica to see our missionary working with the indigenous people groups of Costa Rica. We look forward to the opportunity to go to Honduras. We also have a missionary in Panama. We support a missionary in Panama. We also support a missionary in Ghana, West Africa. This is the second poorest country in the Western Hemisphere. Haiti's first, Nicaragua second. And yet we're supporting missions on a local level. We're supporting missions on an international level. Thank you for the example to us in Nicaragua to see that it needs to be done, no matter what. You're there in 1 Samuel chapter 17. This is the common Bible story, if you will, that kids get growing up in Sunday school. It is David and Goliath. And I, like I say, I have a lot of messages from this story, but I believe this one, the soldier of the cross, is very vital to missions. You see, we're referred to much of the time as soldiers of the cross. But let me explain to you, there's a lot of different types of soldiers out there. In fact, a man I know in Ohio, in Canton, Ohio to be specific, his son, along with 280 other men, signed up to go in to train for the opportunity to get the title Navy SEAL. Out of those 280 men, and let me tell you, you sign up to go to that type of training, you are a tough guy. You are the real deal. But out of those 280 guys, 20 of them made it. Now, those 280 tough guys, and out of 280, 20 made it. To become a Navy SEAL, it is a decision in your mind. Now, I'm going to be asking you this morning, what kind of a soldier am I? Because if you are a Christian, if you've accepted Christ, you are a soldier. But I want to ask you what kind of a soldier you are, because to become the Navy SEAL of the Christian world, to become the Navy SEAL of a church, to become a Navy SEAL for the cause of Christ, it's a decision. Now, in this Bible story, that's actually a true story that happened, there was a lot of bench warmers. There were a lot of people sitting on the sidelines. Why? Why was that happening? Well, because a man who's nearly 10 feet tall, who's been trained since he was a child to be an assassin, to be a killer, to be a soldier, steps out on the edge of this valley and starts yelling out against God's people, against God, and putting out a challenge saying, send out your champion. If your champion comes out and he defeats me, the Philistines will serve you. If I defeat him, you must serve the Philistines. Now understand, much of the time we can focus on how these soldiers, these men of Israel, were saying, I'm not going out there. I don't have faith, etc. We'll talk about their lack of faith. I can't do this. Well, how many of us would step up to the plate and say, I'll go fight that 10-foot tall killer with armor, a shield bearer, his sword and his spear? Not many people are going to step up to that. Many people are going to be willing to go out there and do that. But one young boy who's not even trained as a soldier, who doesn't even have armor, who doesn't even have a sword, and really, at that point, I can't imagine he even knew how to use a sword. He steps out there and fights what nobody else does. Many soldiers aren't interested in the battle today. You are soldiers of the cross, and there is a battle, and it's missions, and it's the world, and it's people dying. But we're hiding like the battle in us and ours, waiting for somebody else to do it. Others stood back while David got in the fight. Others were fine in the status quo while David stood up. Now, if you have your Bible, whether it's on iPad, iPod, iPhone, whatever eye you have, or you have a regular leather-bound Bible, whatever you have, hold it up in the air. You see, that's your sword. That's your sword. And it's time to take this sword, dust it off, and get in the fight. It's time to dust off the sword and start winning people to Christ. Because the Acts 1:8 mentality, the Acts 1:8 church, is reaching people around the world, but they're also reaching people in their Jerusalem. And your Jerusalem is right here in Des Moines, Iowa. And I believe this church is a full-blown 1:8 church. You are reaching people in your Jerusalem, and you are reaching people in the uttermost. And I believe those that have been on the trips with me believe they've been to the uttermost. They believe that the uttermost involves a lot of beans and rice. But But if you want to know how to be this kind of soldier like David was, it's real easy. You see, David has certain keys to his life. And if you learn to follow the keys to the life of David in everything that you do in your Christian walk, the keys to the life of David found right here in 1 Samuel chapter 17, then you will be not only a soldier, you'll be a good soldier. Not only a good soldier, I believe that you have the potential to be the special forces of the cross. And there are some people out there talking about this now. There are some people that are living their lives and thinking like the primitive church. When they sold land and possessions and laid the money at the apostles' feet. You see, that mentality hasn't been around for a long, long time. But then you have some books coming out like Radical and Crazy Love, and people are starting to catch on and get involved and think, hey, we need to take this seriously. And they're wanting these people, these Christians around the world, to think like radical Christians. But trust me, it's not radical at all. You're just following the patterns of the primitive church. When you say, let's do it all for God. Let's give it all for God. Let's give it our all for God. The first key to being a good soldier like David is keep your focus on the cause. Keep your focus on the cause. You see, the cause is people. We have churches in Nicaragua. They're the cause. Typically, when we have a church, there used to be trees and dirt, nothing there. And now there's land and there's buildings and there's pastors. And what's neat about this weekend, as I'm preaching here, I'm away from my ministry in Nicaragua, right? What's even neater is not one of our pastors in the seven churches in Nicaragua are preaching in their own church today. Their associates are in their churches because all of them have taken a trip, gone to the northern region, and are having a special service in the La Esmeralda church to place our pastor that we've been training for all these years into the position. And they're all there, and they're having a special service, and they're having a special ceremony, if you will. And they're all going to come forward, the pastors, the congregation, and they're going to hold up his hands like they held up Moses' hands when they went to battle. And they're going to transition that church under the leadership of Dennis. Why? Well, because churches like Capital City Baptist Church decided to start supporting missions and get the job done. And even though I'm not there, the ministry goes on. And even though they're not in their local church this weekend, the ministry goes on. Why? Because it's God's church. What's the cause? People. The church planting endeavor that we're supposed to be a part of. If you look there on that map, see, God is a pretty good strategist. He's laid out where he wants us to have these churches. We just jump through the hoops. When God allows the doors to open, we jump through them. He opens the doors and he's strategizing on how we're going to reach Nicaragua for Christ, and it's already happening. See, David could see the cause. What is the cause? What does the cause boil down to? We see when a missionary leaves for a furlough for a year, he at least wants to get together with his people before he goes. And in our case, we got together with our people at a camp. We spent some days with them. We had some messages for them. We were vision casting in them. Why? Because you want them to walk away from something that's going to motivate them to do something for the cause of Christ, because you're going to be gone for a year. And we did that very thing. But see, Jesus left for a couple thousand years. And if you're leaving for a couple thousand years, you're probably going to do a little vision casting to your leadership team, don't you think? And so what's he do? Well, you got to figure out what's the most important thing on the heart of Jesus. What is it? Well, think about what he was saying and think about his last words. Matthew 28, 19 and 20. Mark 16, 15. What was it? Go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. So when you have a missionary focus in your church, in essence, what you're doing is focusing on the vision casting and the heart of Jesus and what was the most important thing in the heart of Jesus. That's the cause. You see, David could see a cause, something worth fighting for, standing up for God, standing up against evil. Do you see the cause? Do you see something worth fighting for? Do you see the worth of getting involved? Had we not gone to Nicaragua, where would these people be? In that Managua church that you see there, I was the pastor there. I handed that church over. The guy that pastors that church, he was at one time in his life just some kid off the street like anybody else. Just like the kids that are getting saved in our sports ministries and plugging into our youth departments and our churches and answering their call to ministry. His dad left him as a child. His mom died of cancer when he was 15. He started trying to make money as good as he could in the markets, scratching together whatever he could do. But see, Wilfredo had been a boxer too. He had boxed enough to kind of learn the ropes. So he would go into the neighborhoods, and they called him El Chile, the chili. They would throw down money. He would show up. Somebody from another neighborhood would show up. And they'd fist fight. Winner takes all. How'd you like to do that for a living? This isn't a controlled environment. This isn't a boxing ring or a cage. This is on the streets of Managua. Now he's the pastor of the mother church. See, God can do anything with anybody. That's what's going on when a missionary goes to the field. That's what's going on when you support missions. That's what's going on when you pick up the word of God and you say, you know, it's worth it. Because in 1 Samuel chapter 17, when David got around asking, why isn't somebody getting involved? And his older brother gives him a hard time and says, go back home, little shepherd boy. And he's basically belittling him. What are you doing here? You're just here to see the battle. You're just curious. Well, see, David, he just reacts with one simple question. It says here in verse 29 of 1 Samuel chapter 17, and David said, what have I done now? Is there not a cause? Isn't there something worth fighting for? You see, the first thing is keeping your focus on the cause. The second thing I want you to come away with, the second key to the life of David, the second key to being a good soldier, is have faith in God to get in the fight with you. Have faith in God to get in the fight with you. You see, sometimes it's not easy, though. We just came out of a recession, did we not? We just came out of a recession. 2008 was a little bit of a sideswipe. 2008 kind of shook things up a little bit in America. 2008 made things very difficult. But let me explain something to you. When the recession came to America, when the recession affected the world's economy, and especially our economy here in America, God was not in heaven going, oh man, I didn't see that coming. What a surprise. God wasn't up in heaven wringing out his hands going, man, I shouldn't have been on vacation. I come back and the world falls apart. No, he saw it coming. He knew. And guess what? See, God in his omniscience knew about the recession that was going to begin in 2008, even when he gave the Great Commission. See, that's omniscience. He knows. He knows what's going to happen. He knows all. And guess what? Even in times that are difficult, even when times aren't easy, you got to stay in the fight if you want to be the special forces. You see, in Managua, sometimes you just don't have money. Or in Nicaragua, you don't have enough money. Things don't go your way. You don't have a roof and the ministry's going. What do you do? Well, we're going to have to wait until we get a building before we can minister to these children. No. You put up some chairs and you teach under the sun. And that's my wife teaching under the sun. Guess what? It's not comfortable. It's not easy. And in that picture, it's probably 95 to 100 degrees, 80% humidity. And there she is. Why? Because even though it's not easy, you got to have faith in God to get in the fight with you. When it's time to be involved in faith promise, it may not be easy sometimes. But you got to have faith that God's in your corner. God's got your back. He still has a command, and he was not sideswiped by any recession. You know, when they sent off those soldiers to take out Osama bin Laden, who did they send? Who did they send? The SEALs. Why did they send the SEALs? They're the best. Now, what is the SEAL mentality? Because I'll tell you what, if I'm going into hostile areas to take out some world-renowned psycho killer, Muslim radical, whatever, and my helicopter goes down, I'm thinking, abort, abort, abort. Let's go back and get a better helicopter and do this later. But what happened? Everything went wrong. But see, they had a mission to complete, and everything going wrong, it still didn't matter. They still had a mission to complete. Even if the helicopter blew up, even if the recession blows up our nation, we still have a mission to complete. And those soldiers, those special forces, they went in and they completed the mission. We have a mission to complete, and it doesn't matter if everything goes our way or not. We still have a command. We still have a commander. We've still been sent on a mission. Some are sent to the front lines, and some are paying for the front lines. You can't complete the Great Commission without my family and other missionary families. But we can't complete the Great Commission without your church family. We're automatically a team. Everybody just has a different part. You got to have faith in God to get in the fight. And see, that's exactly the mentality of David when they said, you can't do it. He's been trained as a youth, since a youth. He's a killer. And his answer was in verse 36, 1 Samuel 17:36. You know, you say I can't do this, but let me tell you something. Here's how it works. You see, your servant has killed both the lion and the bear. And this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, seeing he has defied the armies of the living God. Then he continues. Moreover, David said, the Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear, he will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine. And Saul said to David, go, and the Lord be with you. Saul had no faith. Saul was seeing sorcerers. Saul was involved in things that were ungodly and not acceptable. So he's saying, go and good luck. David's saying, it's not about me. It's not about my armor. It's not about a sword. It's not about my training. It's not about his size. It's not about this massive obstacle that we have to go up against. This is God's fight. I'm just a tool. When you have faith in God to get in the fight with you, you're understanding that what you are is one of God's many tools that he's going to use to get the job done. You got to get out there. You got to get in the fight. See, David knew God. And when God is with us, even the giants can't win. Recessions, that's a giant. That's an obstacle. But it's not an impossible task to go through. You see, a special forces, the Navy SEALs, they see an obstacle, they see how to bust through it. Others see an obstacle, they see how to run away from it. Are you a good soldier of the cross? Do you see the obstacle and run and run away and go in reverse and throw in the towel? You just say, no, I can't do this. Throw in the towel. No more. Or do you say, you know what? I'm going to put my head down. I'm going to go straight through it. You see, the problem is many, many years ago, there was a word. And the word was grit. And people had what was called grit. And even though you were hurt, you went to work. Even though you were sick, you went to work. Even though you didn't feel good, you kept going. You see, the word grit basically doesn't even exist in our vocabulary anymore. To be the special forces, you got to have grit. You got to say, you know, that hurts. Oh, well. And you stay in the fight. That's grit. Do you have grit? Because a special forces soldier has grit. Number three, love God and others more than ourselves. Love God and others more than ourselves. That's a group of people that just graduated in June. That's the soldiers of the cross. In that group, you have all kinds of walks of life. You have young people. You have former shoemakers. You have Wilfredo who fought on the streets of Managua just to survive. You have Rachel and I serving there alongside with them. You have Porfirio and Blanca, which I would like to mention. They're not in the city of Jalapa. Stop it. When the Spanish words come up, just have me say them. It hurts my ears. How the choir could sing in Spanish so beautifully and be such a blessing, and then you say jalopy. You're killing me here. All right. It's jalapa. All right? Where you get jalopy out of jalapa, or even jalapa out of jalapa, I don't know. Just leave it to Pastor Mark, and he'll do it. He's amazing. He's amazing. He's got phonetics down there in there somewhere. But you have Porfirio and you have Blanca in the city of Jalapa. And she was a professor and a director in a private school in Nicaragua. You have Porfirio, her husband, who was the sub-director of the largest high school in the entire country. They both quit their jobs to go into full-time Christian service, to train, to go through the seminary, and to be pastor and pastor's wife in Jalapa now. And they're making about one-fourth of his paycheck, what his paycheck used to be. Not hers and his, what his used to be. Why? Because they're all in. Why? Because they're the special forces. Why? Because when he sees an obstacle, he puts his head down and he goes through it. He doesn't retreat. That's why. And then they take all their diplomas and they put them up on a wall and they put a verse under there that says, I count all this as trash for the gospel's sake. All of their secular degrees that could make them all kinds of money in the country. And what do? I count it all as trash because I've been called to something greater. Full-time Christian service. Wow. What an attitude. How that ministers to the missionary. See, loving God and others more than ourselves, that's putting the needs of other people before yourself. That's putting the desires of God before your own needs. That's what love is. Do you love people? When you give to missions, that means you love people. When you give to missions, that means you love God. When you give to missions, that means you're being obedient to the command. You're listening to the commander. You're completing the mission. So we have many keys to the life of David. Are you going to apply them to your life? You keep your focus on the cause. The cause is missions. You have faith in God to get in the fight with you. Are you in the fight? Have you been in the fight? Have you been in the fight and backed down? You love God and others more than yourself. That's missions. That's being a good soldier of the cross. But number four, I'd like you to focus on this for a moment. Be passionate in the fight. Are you passionate? Do you have passion? You see here in Nicaragua, you got to have some passion. You got to be self-motivated. You got to see the need. And see, we could step back and watch the video and go, man, there's seven churches. There's a hospital. There's three sports centers. There's seven feeding centers. And in those churches, they have satellite churches. And from those churches, they have satellite feeding centers. In fact, the last count I got, all together, there's 15 different feeding locations, not seven. I just count the ones that are in the church location. And I haven't even been to the satellites. That's the pastors and their churches doing it on their own. Now we could step back and go, you know what? Let's just take it easy for a while. Let's just soak it up. I mean, we got a lot of churches. We got the seminary. You guys have invested. Even you guys, you know, let's just kick back for a while. Or you could say, you know what? Now that this thing's rolling, let's keep it rolling, get it rolling faster. You see, something that's very interesting, when you train somebody to box, for instance, a kid, a young kid, an 8, a 10-year-old walks in the gym, and he walks into that gym, and you're going to teach him how to fight. There's two things that are very, very difficult to teach a young fighter. One, when he gets punched in the nose, stay in the fight. I love this illustration. I use it all the time. He gets punched in the nose, he's got to stay in the fight. That's hard. They don't want to stay in the fight. The second thing is, once they punch a guy, they land a punch, the tendency is to kind of step back and look at their handiwork. Man, I laid a good one on him, and the next thing they know, bip, they get hit. So what do? When you punch a guy, you land it. What do you do? What are you training to do? If you hit him and you land it, what do? You hit him again. And again, and again, and again. Folks, we have just punched the devil in the face. He's not happy, and he's punched back. We've been punched a few times. But every time there's a church planted, every time there's somebody saved, every time somebody graduates from the seminary, every time there's another sports center put in, another feeding center, those are punches. Those are hits on the devil. We already have the blueprints drawn up. We've already bought a piece of property in the Leon Church. We've already negotiated the cost for a piece of property in the Jalapa Church. We already have the blueprints drawn up for various projects throughout the country. Right now, as of yesterday, without any future visionary thinking, we need just over $1 million. Well, man, that's going to take some soldiering. That's going to take some special forces. That's going to take everybody being all in for missions. See, let me explain something. What happened in 1 Samuel chapter 17, verse 52, this is what happens when you have passion. If you'll give like passion, if you'll react like passion, with passion, this is what happens. Verse 52. See, nobody would get in the fight. Everybody was afraid to be in the fight. And then David, he comes onto the scene and he fights even though he hasn't even been trained. And the men of the Philistines, they were looking for the fight. And the men of Israel, they were afraid to fight. But one young man steps up to the plate, gets in the fight, and what happens? Verse 51, therefore David ran and stood over the Philistine, took his sword and drew it out of his sheath and killed him and cut off his head with it. And when the Philistines saw that their champion was dead, they fled. He won. Against all odds, he won. Why? Because God was in his corner. But then let's see what happens after he wins when he, by all rights, should not have. Verse 52, now the men of Israel and Judah arose and shouted and pursued the Philistines as far as the entrance of the valley and to the gates of Ekron. And the wounded of the Philistines fell along the road to Shaaraim, even as far as Gath and Ekron. What happened? Those looking for the fight are scared. They're running scared. Those that didn't want to fight, they're chasing out after them. They're winning. They're having a victory. Why? Because people followed the passion of David. Maybe the people around you in this church are not involved in missions like they should be. Who cares? You get involved in missions. You have the passion. People will see the passion in your life, the love in your life, and you know what? Eventually, maybe they'll get convicted and they'll have the passion that they had when they followed David. Maybe other churches aren't doing it here in Iowa. So what? Set the standard. You be the church that others say, you know what? We need to be more like Capital City. They're doing it. They're making it happen. We got to follow this. We got to do what they're doing. We got to go talk to Pastor Mark and see what's going on. What are they doing that we're not? You set the standard. Be passionate in the fight. Now, we've talked about the special soldiers. Now, how many of you read Reader's Digest? Raise your hand. The first step is that you have to admit you have the problem. Okay? We read Reader's Digest. Now, September, Reader's Digest, SEAL Team 6 actually met one of the guys that does and builds the tech for SEAL Team 6. The night vision, the thermal stuff. I actually got to meet this guy. Interesting guy. And he was kind of explaining the SEAL Team 6 is like, they're like the special forces within the special forces. These are the tough guys. These are the ones that get the job done. But it's talking about their SEAL training, and it goes through this in this magazine. It says, we did all manner of acrobatic tortures on the beach until the sand rubbed our wet skin raw. That's like it within the first 30 minutes. All right? They're already up to it in the battle. And then it shows this picture here. You won't be able to see it, but I'll explain it. It's easy. There's men in a pool. Their hands are tied behind their backs. Their feet are tied together. And it is called the dreaded drown-proofing test. I sign up. You say that the next step is dreaded drown-proofing test, Pastor Mark. I don't know about you, but that's when I go, you know what? I got to do this thing with these people over at this place. I mean, I'm already looking for excuses. Not them. No, they're the special forces. And they do it. And they're thrown in. And the idea, you survive. I guess you get to continue. And they sign up for this. Why? Because they start here. Their special forces already in their brain. They're already wired for this. Are you wired for this? Are you willing to be the special forces? Are you willing to make these things happen? It says here, SEAL training prepared us to believe we can accomplish the mission and never surrender. No SEAL has ever been held a prisoner of war. I did not know that until I read this article. Even when we're outnumbered and outgunned, we still tend to think we have a chance to make it out alive and be home in time for dinner. Nevertheless, sometimes a SEAL must make a choice between fighting to the death and surrendering. For many brave warriors, it's better to roll the dice on surrendering in order to fight or to live to fight another day. SEALs have incredible respect for those POWs. As SEALs, though, we believe surrender would be giving in, and giving in is never an option. Let me read that again. As SEALs, though, this is the mentality of special forces. This should be the mentality of the Christian special forces. We believe surrender would be giving in, and giving in is never an option. What's happened in your life that's made you say, I give, I can't take it anymore. I can't be a part of missions, I can't give this year, I'm not doing it, we're not going to increase, I'm not going to surrender to be a missionary, I'm not going to pray that my kids will go off to the mission field. I talked to you young people, teenagers. I said, be ready to make a decision today. Are you ready to make decisions, people? I'm not saying because this is a missions emphasis to make a decision for the rest of the year or for the next year. I'm saying make a commitment to the Lord to be better, to be a soldier, to be the special forces involved in missions for the rest of your life. Folks, the end is near. Jesus is coming. We got to make hay while the sun's shining. We got to get the job done. If you'd stand with your heads bowed and your eyes closed, please.